RadioSaintPete.com.
Live event coverage from RadioSaintPete.com, March 7th, 2014. Congresswoman Kathy Castor from Pinellas and Hillsborough counties in Florida speaking at the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club luncheon at the St. Petersburg Yacht Club.
So, I thought I'd give a little context while you all think about your priorities for this wonderful community. Think about the context of, my 7 years in the Congress, being your voice and your advocate, have been a truly remarkable time. Times of great progress, but times of very deep economic challenges for so many of our neighbors. I was elected in 2006, the second half of George Bush's second term in office, 5 years removed from September 11th, when what was the number one issue in the election of 2006? Was the war in Iraq. At that time, a lot of new information was coming out about what led America down the path to war in Iraq, a country that did not attack us on September 11th, and some of the intelligence failures, to put it kindly at this point. So my first committee assignment was the House Armed Services Committee. At a time when the war in Iraq was really dividing the country, public opinion was beginning to turn. And what really informed my time on the House Armed Services Committee was visiting the VA hospitals here, because the James A. Haley Hospital in Tampa is the busiest VA in the country, and it is home to one of four polytrauma centers. So my visits there monthly exposed me to these young heroes that had been wounded overseas, and the need for us to take care of them and live up to our responsibilities as Americans. The same thing visiting the Bay Pines here, where they do wonderful work in mental health, and sitting down with some of the veterans and soldiers who had come back from the battlefield after a number of tours, and realizing that we needed to step up and make sure that just because a war is coming to an end, that our support for the brave men and women that serve this country never comes to an end. And of course, Mr. Young was an important ally in that. So in those early days of my service, when the war was raging, it was I think back on two very important pieces of legislation that were passed, the Wounded Warrior Assistance Act. If you remember, there was some scandal out of the Walter Reed Hospital with the conditions there. And then the second given time to reflect before I arrived here, I think one of the most important pieces of legislation I've co-sponsored is the GI Bill for the 21st century that we passed in 2008 and grants and provides a four-year scholarship to every Iraq and Afghanistan veteran. Last week when I flew back home, I sat next to a young man that works at Special Operations Command at MacDill Air Force Base, and we got to talking, and he said, I didn't ask about the GI Bill, but he said, I've been in service, I've been overseas everywhere, and I came back, and I just finished my MBA at the University of Tampa. I said, was that on the new GI Bill? He said, yes. So I think looking back, that will be one of the most impactful pieces of legislation in my early term in office. And then the time on armed services was also fascinating because a couple of years later, to kind of put some closure on September 11th and what we have done overseas, I was able to hear Admiral McRaven from Special Operations give us a classified briefing on the Osama bin Laden raid in Abbottabad. And then seared in my memory is a trip shortly thereafter to the CIA headquarters to see the photos of from the raid and of Osama bin Laden. Did not get a lot of press because it's not something that you really talk about a lot. But I thought that was important. There were some folks at the time said, well, we don't know if that's really true or really accurate. And I think after all the country had been through, it was important to understand what happened there and to see it for myself. So that was kind of the early, not that long ago. But so shortly thereafter, the focus of the country and in this community turned from a country embroiled in a huge war effort to one that was a war on our economy, our homes, and our jobs. And ever since, the bottom fell out of the economy. And to that, starting here much earlier than other parts of the country, it's all been economic. Almost all of the focus for me and my great team in my office and so many of you as partners has been keeping people in their homes. At about 2008, I started having these foreclosure prevention workshops because people were losing their jobs, losing their homes. The mortgage system, especially in Florida, was a mess. It was those economic stresses now that took all priority. And memory seared in my consciousness, in late 2008, remember the stock market dropping, what is Congress going to do about it? I will never forget Hank Paulson, then the Treasury Secretary, coming before a meeting of, that you go and meet with the Democratic side, you meet with the Republican side. We had a joint meeting. He comes in with a two-page bill and says, I need $700 billion for Wall Street banks. That was probably the most unsettling time during my seven-year time in the Congress. $700 billion for Wall Street banks. They say, oh, you've got to do it. It's going to save the economy. We have to have it. I said, well, where is the help for homeowners on the ground? I was just in South St. Pete working with somebody for their mortgage. They just lost their job. All they want is a little breathing room till they get back to work. Where is the piece of this legislation that will provide the ability for them to stay in their home for another 5 or 6 months while they get a job? So that wasn't very popular, and I was the only Democrat to do it, and it was a mixed vote. There were Republicans and Democrats that voted for the $700 billion Wall Street bailout. But after working on the ground here with people, I didn't think it was fair to say $700 billion goes to the Wall Street banks without some lifeline for the homeowners there. Now, the Congress did follow on with important neighborhood stabilization funds, many that have constructed housing right here in St. Petersburg and in Tampa. The NSP program with Councilman Newton and Commissioner Welch and all of our local partners. I remember being out there with Mayor Foster and we're breaking ground, but it just seemed like such a drop in the bucket based upon what was really happening in the economy. And it was a strange time. You remember that? It was President Bush was on his way out and the bottom was falling out and here, and we were kind of captivated with this Hillary versus Barack primary season, and then President Obama wins and behind the scenes during transition, it was all about how do we save the economy, because it looked quite dire. President Obama takes the oath of office, and immediately we have to think about a second round of recovery funds. I somewhat understand the rise of the Tea Party at that time. Oh my gosh, $700 billion for Wall Street banks, and now we've got to do another kind of stimulus. But that Recovery Act, passed in early 2009, was the lifeline that really saved this economy. It has constructed... Someone loves the Recovery Act, but... You can point to initiatives all across this community where it created jobs, and it provided tax cuts, and it was... some say it wasn't large enough, but when you look at what it did at MacDill, what it did for our crosstown connector, US 19. We even put solar panels on top of the Coliseum and the St. Pete City Hall to create jobs and do everything we could to save the economy. But that was also a time of kind of this new progressivism that I was very proud to be a part of as a representative and voice for this community. The first law President Obama signed was the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. I was proud to stand with President Obama as we expanded health insurance for children under the state Children's Health Insurance Program, known in Florida as Healthy Kids, that was actually started a long time ago with a governor named Lawton Childs and an education commissioner named Betty Castor, who thought, hey, that's kind of smart. When kids go to school, you make sure they can see a doctor. So the expansion, I was able to stand with the president as he signed that into law. We passed hate crimes legislation. The Matthew Shepard and James Byrd hate crime legislation that gives local law enforcement more tools to address hate crimes based on discrimination. This, the one big issue that captured our attention as part of the Recovery Act in 2009-2010 was the saga over high-speed rail in Florida, in this community. Talk about something that would have created thousands and thousands of jobs and left a legacy for this community, that tourism is our lifeblood, to get those tourists from Walt Disney World over here to the beaches would have been remarkable. So trying to convince, it seemed then Governor Crist was, there was a famous hug in Fort Myers, there was a lot of work, but there was another election going. And in the midst of, after President Obama and Vice President Biden came to the University of Tampa, in what we will look back on as a very historic trip, because rarely do a president and vice president travel together to a community to make a grand announcement, shortly thereafter, the state of Florida elected Rick Scott as governor. And he said, I control the decision here, and I do not believe in high-speed rail. And sent those monies and jobs back to Washington. That was kind of a devastating blow for people who had been working so hard on transportation solutions, something that would boost our area coming, trying to get us out of this recession. I still look back on that today as a great regret and an opportunity lost when I think about the context of my service in the Congress. And then in 2010, what happened in April as we're trying to claw our way out of the recession, the Great Recession, something that was a real setback? The BP blowout. This also took a great deal of our community's focus. As we started to finally come out of the recession, what happens in April 2010? The BP blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, and we all watched for months and months as the oil kept spewing out of the Gulf of Mexico. And they came up with all these potential fixes, and what are we going to do, and how do we cap the well, and finally got a cap by August, I think it was, but the damage was done here to so many of our businesses along the beach. So from that point on, part of the economic recovery solution wasn't just housing and jobs, it was holding BP accountable. And I'm thinking back on my 7 years, and what really stands out, having that BP CEO in front of my committee where I could ask him, this was after he said, boy, I want to get my life back. And I was able to ask him on behalf of the residents and businesses of Florida, how were we going to get our livelihoods back? And to this day, I know there are people in this room still working to get resources back from the BP claims facility. But we, thank God, we had USF St. Pete here, the best researchers. They were out hustling NOAA and all of the other federal researchers. And we worked hard to shame BP into giving them $10 million to the state university system so they could keep their research efforts going. We had to fight them for the fingerprint of the oil. They had denied one of the researchers here the actual of the oil, and we had to press them. Oh, that's a nice way of saying it, to do that. So then things start to change. With the drag on the economy, and it's so slow, and I don't think we realized how far we had fallen. The 2010 election swept in a group in the Congress that changed this, changed the direction. Let's put it that way. All of this progress we have made in trying to boost the economy, now we're confronted with a real ideological divide. Sometimes after these, when you look back in history, these historic crises, sometimes the politics swings too far. And I think it has swung too far because the Republican Party I see in Congress now is split. There is a real ideological divide to the point where some were willing to shut down the government. We started talking about government shutdown in 2011. They finally accomplished it in 2013. This is about the time that they introduced this very radical plan to change Medicare into a voucher if you're 55 and younger, that you would get a $6,000 to $8,000 voucher and really, I think, break the promise of Medicare for future generations. Even to the point where last year we had to fight over the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, something that had always been bipartisan in the past. And if you think, it wasn't too long ago when we did children's health care, that was bipartisan. When we did hate crimes legislation, that was bipartisan. But there was this new ideological divide now that I think we have got to change around. We've got to turn it around to get back on track. So that's where I'm going to ask you all. Okay, here we are. You know the lay of land. You're all the political, you're all in the know. 4 days away from this congressional election, what is your priority? What do you think Alex Sink, David Jolly's elected? You say, David and Kathy, or Alex and Kathy, this is what you two need to be working on. I'm going to start with Commissioner Welch, but I want to see some hands here. And I know you've been thinking about it, and you probably didn't agree with everything I said, or have a different view, and I want to hear it. All right, Commissioner, what's the priority?
Do I need a mic or just go?
We have 1 more minute, by the way, until we get to ask you this.
Thanks, Dean, for 30 seconds. Thank you, Sonia.
2 minutes.
Thank you for your leadership in Congress, Representative Castro. I want to thank you that, first of all. Lincoln Newton is on PSTA, so I'm going to count on him to ask the green light question for me. But I want to convey to you the issue of voting rights. Even in today's paper, there is an article about a renewed legislation to make it harder to vote in Pinellas County. We have elected a supervisor who does a great job. She has remote ballot drop-off sites that work well. We see another attempt to try to make those illegal. We have a voter purge. We have continued attempts to make it harder to vote in Pinellas County, and we need your help at a federal level.
Well, thank you very much, and Ken, thank you very much for all of your great leadership. Voting rights is another one of these issues, too, that has hit this roadblock of the ideological divide in the Congress right now. The Supreme Court had a recent decision that requires the Congress to come back and do its homework and address it. Unfortunately, the House leadership, the current leadership, says, no, that's not on our agenda. So we're going to have to keep pressing. There is one Republican, Jim Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin, who is working with civil rights icon John Lewis from Atlanta, and they are working on a bill. But we're going to have to change some minds up there to get it on the agenda.
Thank you.
All right, Councilman, what's the priority?
Councilman, I'm going to say it's in Petersburg, PSA board member, NPO board member, and red light camera activist. My question for you, Congresswoman, is with the successful passage of the our new Greenlight Pinellas transit plan, will you work with Alex Sink to make sure we get funding to our community go forward with the transportation?
Great. This is one where this should be an area that should have great bipartisan and attention and support. There are some in the Congress, however, that say that they do not see a federal role in transportation. This runs counter to the history of our country, of course, when you even go back to the early American days with ports and roadways and things like this. Of course the federal government, as your partner to state and local communities, has a responsibility to send the gas tax monies that we all pay back to local communities. There is going to be a bit of a food fight over how much of that revenue should go to transit initiatives, but I can guarantee you I'm going to work very hard for Greenlight Pinellas federal dollars to come back here. I think it is vital to the future of Pinellas County, to jobs. And I've shared with the councilman and the commissioner, that line needs to be planned to run into South St. Pete, where they have transportation challenges and need to get to jobs. Okay. Now, what's your priority? You can ask me a question, but I want to hear from you first.
No, I'm the pipe beggar. I'm going to ask you a question. You get the wrong word. My name is Dave Sackerman. I want to ask you a specific question. As a minority member of the Congress, now that we've lost our beloved Bill Young, do you think that you have just as strong position to bring on the bacon as you would if you were a majority person in the Congress?
Yes, I do, but it's a little different these days. The days of the earmarks are over. My first couple of years in the Congress, I advocated for monies and brought them back to the VA hospital and USF because that was really one of my passions, to make sure that our wounded warriors are getting the top-notch health care and mental health care that they deserve. Also, I think those funds were oftentimes communities know better than the bureaucrats in Washington of where projects should be spent. The problem was there was such great abuse with the earmark system oftentimes. You remember Congressman Duke Cunningham from San Diego? In the mid 2005, 2006, he went to jail because he was living on a yacht in the Potomac because he had kind of sold his earmarks. Now, I think there's a way to do them if you can reform it so it's transparent. They don't go to corporations. They go to local governments and universities and nonprofits and community colleges. Can you bring home the bacon, even as a minority member? I'd point to a couple of things. I advocated with President Obama the day, even before he was elected, that we needed to expand Tampa International Airport as a gateway to Latin America and a gateway to Cuba. That has been a great success. It has created jobs. It's not something that required money from the federal government. It required a change in policy. And I think we can continue to build on that as a gateway to Latin America. That's one example. But yes, you can bet I'm going to continue to advocate for every dollar, every resource to come here. All right, I'm going to ask these Largo high school students, Alec and Tristan, what their priorities are. And you can ask me a question at the same time. What do you want your country focused on, and especially your congressional members from Pinellas County?
Well, as a student who will be entering college in just 5.5 short months, one of my top interests to me is education, personally. I guess the biggest question I would have for you is that states like Massachusetts, New York, California do proportionally better in admission rates to competitive universities and on standardized testing. As a state and as a nation, how can we ensure best that our distribution of educational resources is equitable across the entire country to ensure that the system really holds no one behind?
Thank you, Tristan. Great question. This is a real challenge of our time, especially when you reflect upon the growing inequality, the concentration of wealth in the top 0.1% and stagnant wages for most working people in our community, for sure. I think there are a few things that have to be done. We've got to expand what we're doing on need-based aid. Now, we've had battles, these budget battles, over the past couple of years of what the level of Pell Grant should be. And the good news is that out of the last budget battle, the Democrats held firm, and the Pell Grant now is at its historically high level of about $5,300 annually. That is a tremendous lifeline for families and students, especially in this community. I talk to students from St. Pete College, from Eckerd College, from HCC, and this is the difference in their ability to attend class, and most of these are working people, by the way. They're working their way through school, but that Pell Grant gives them the ability to do that. You've also got to provide greater support to the first-time college student, the first in the family to attend college, the Upward Bound initiatives. Those are important. You've got to work with your partners at the state level, like they've done with Bright Futures, and that is an important change. I know all parents say, my student deserves Bright Futures, but that really should go more to need-based aid than scholastic achievement. I think that's very important. Keeping the student loan rates low is a fundamental change we made in my early days in the Congress to make sure that community colleges and universities control those monies and not the big banks. So there's a lot to it, but I don't think you're going to have any trouble, and I look forward to seeing how you will come back to this community and become a leader yourself. All right, how about somebody in the back?
Harvey Landers. Given that Congress's popularity is somewhere below that of used car sales and 10% approval rate, and all politics are local, do you think anybody in Congress really cares about what the national polls are about the approval rate of Congress?
Well, I have to be honest, I agree with them. If I was polled about the Congress today, it would be very low. I'd give them an F grade. They're not addressing the challenges that face our country right now that continue to be economic. And here's some things that we really should be working on. It is very important to raise minimum wage, to get families all across America a living wage. There was a report that came out yesterday that said if we could raise the minimum wage, we could cut food stamps outlays by 4.6%. If you raise the minimum wage, you lift almost a million families out of poverty immediately and take them out of other outlays like Medicaid and other costly benefits. Give them the dignity of work and the ability to succeed. I think that's very important. Second, immigration reform. We have millions of people in this country that want to come out of the shadows and work and not be part of this society and not have to hide. If we were to pass the bipartisan bill that came out of the Senate, that comprehensive immigration reform, it would cut the deficit because you'd have more people working and paying their taxes, and it would lengthen the life of the Social Security Trust Fund. It would also, I think the 13-year path to citizenship is a little too long, but I think that's to get this across the finish line, that's a fair trade-off. I think we still have great inequities when it comes to women as well. And part of the economic agenda has got to be more workplace flexibility and fair pay. Because when women succeed, America succeeds. Okay, let's get a woman. Here. Yeah.
What, if anything, do you think the federal government should keep its nose and fingers out of?
Yes. That's a good one. Well, let's face it. The government has overreached when it comes to potentially what it's doing on wiretapping and spying. That has got to be that area is ripe for reform. Now, I'm not saying they're not listening to American citizens here in America on your email or your phone. But this has got, there have to be clear lines drawn, and I think over time some of those lines have gotten too blurry. I do support, though, our ability to proceed with the greatest technological advances that our country has to keep us safe. But it's very important for the Congress to provide proper oversight to make sure those lines are being drawn. And I think, as I talked about the pendulum swinging after 9/11, it probably swung a little too far for all of the intelligence gathering. We've brought it back a little bit, but I think that's our responsibility to have constant, confident oversight in what the government is doing. Yes, sir.
My name is Gary Stempinski. I want to thank you for your service. And my question to you is, what's our heart?
Oh, my God.
Please hold it up closer.
Hold it up closer. There you go.
My question to you is, Governor Scott's been campaigning here in Pinellas County, proposing a toll road in Mid-County going from east to west. Recently, $191 million for the Tampa airport. It appears that he's shamed by this giving money back on the rail. But the newly elected congresswoman or congressperson and yourself, what initiatives would you propose for Pinellas County on transportation?
Well, let's say that Green Light Pinellas passes. It will be our job as part of the next transportation bill out of the Congress to make sure that transit funds are available, matching funds for bus line expansion, right down to bicycle paths and trails. And it's important to have that variety. Part of the challenge in the Congress right now is the pot of money has dwindled to such an extent. The gas tax was not indexed, so it doesn't increase over time. Cars are more fuel efficient, so the money's going into the transportation fund are dwindling, and yet our country has such huge needs when it comes to infrastructure. The challenge is going to be over time, especially how do we modernize American infrastructure? If you travel around the country, you know, we're fortunate to have Tampa Airport, but some of those other airports are falling apart. We cannot fit many more cars on I-4 going to Orlando. We can't build out any other lanes, so we've got to commit to transit. Those are going to be the redevelopment opportunities. So what I'll be fighting for is that whole range of transportation options that people ask for. Not everyone is a highway person, not everyone's a bus person, not everyone's a bicycle person. You've got to have those options. And why Green Light Pinellas, I hope it passes, for the jobs, for the redevelopment, but for the modernization of infrastructure here, the future of Pinellas County, I think, will be directly tied to our ability to do that.
This is the last question.
All right, Kim.
Kim Black, thank you for being here, and I do want to thank you for your support. The stimulus funding went to help many teachers in Pinellas County. Not one teacher was laid off during 7 years we spoke about. So speaking of education, and that is my focus, what would you say is the federal government's role when it comes to states like ours, where elected leaders and many lobbyists are working very hard to privatize and outsource public education at the expense of the students and the taxpayers?
Kim, and thank you for being an outstanding voice for Pinellas County teachers. The federal role in education is quite interesting. The federal role primarily is to support students with disabilities, to support schools in challenging neighborhoods and families that have economic challenges. The Head Start is a very important federal initiative in partnership with local communities. The Pell Grant and student aid, those are the primary responsibilities of the feds.
Archived live event coverage from RadioSaintPete.com, Congresswoman Kathy Castor from Pinellas and Hillsborough counties in Florida speaking on Friday, March the 7th at the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club at the St. Petersburg Yacht Club. A public affairs presentation of RadioSaintPete.com.
RadioSaintPete.com.